Right, well, welcome back to our Old Testament survey. As you'll recall, we're going through the books of the Old Testament in the order that they appear in the Hebrew Bible, and so we're currently in the third grouping of books known as the Writings. Last week we looked at the book of Proverbs, and this week we're going to back up and pick up a book that we skipped earlier on, and that would be the book of Ruth. So turn in your Bibles with me to the book of Ruth. The Hebrew Bible is divided up into these three groups of books, the Law, the Prophets, and the Writings. Jesus says that the Old Testament speaks of Him and that He was fulfilling the things written there, and He mentions these three groups in Luke 24. Then He said to them, "These are the words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all things must be fulfilled, which were written in the Law of Moses and the Prophets and the Psalms concerning Me." So He's using the book of Psalms as a stand-in for this group of books known as the Writings. The books of the Law told us about the creation of the earth and mankind, the fall, the flood, the call of Abraham, the Exodus, and the establishment of God's law and worship in the tabernacle. The books of the prophets continued the history of the people of God through the establishment of the kingdom, the ascension of David to the throne, and then everything that happened after that through the Babylonian captivity. And the prophets told us why those things were happening. They explained to us the sins that had been committed, the unfaithfulness and breaking of God's covenant that the people had engaged in. And so now this third group of books, the Writings, is showing us how God's people respond to the world around them, how they worshipped during those events that were depicted in the rest of the books of the Old Testament. And so we're learning from these books how to worship God, since we face similar, though thankfully often less dramatic, circumstances than they did. But our lives are similar in many ways, and so we can learn from them how to rightly worship God in all of life. The Psalms set the tone for worshiping God in all of life, but then Job showed us how to deal with our doubts and our questions and how to worship God even when we don't understand everything that's happening to us. Proverbs, which we looked at last week, showed us the path of wisdom, and it showed us that living in the fear of the Lord and making wise choices is the better way to live life, and it personified wisdom for us in various ways. And so this evening, as we look at the book of Ruth, it's a small book, it's only four chapters, but it does several interesting things at this point in the Old Testament. Like Job and many of the Psalms, Ruth teaches us to trust God in the midst of desperate circumstances. It shows us how to worship Him when life seems like it's falling apart, and we'll see that in the first half of the book. But Ruth does something else as well, because it demonstrates for us what we looked at last week in the book of Proverbs. So Proverbs told us how to live wisely, how to live godly lives in the fear of the Lord, and then it showed us at the very end of Proverbs this Proverbs 31 woman who personified that and who lived a very wise life. And so as we look at the book of Ruth, we're going to see that depicted for us in the lives of the two main characters, Ruth and Boaz. But Ruth, of course, does something else as well, and that is it introduces us to the idea of a love story. And so it sets us up for next week in the Song of Solomon, and we'll see that as we go through it as well, because there's something more to that than just a feel-good love story. In our English Bibles, Ruth is placed chronologically after the book of Judges, and so we can see from verse 1 that the story of Ruth takes place sometime during the time of the Judges, in Ruth 1:1. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Now, we don't know for certain who the author of the book of Ruth is, but Jewish tradition holds that Samuel was the author, and so he would have written this around the same time as he was writing his chronicles of Saul and David as well. And that kind of makes sense. As we'll see, Ruth's story is tied into David's story. Ruth is interesting for a couple other reasons as well. It's one of only two books in the entire Bible named for a woman. Esther is the other one, which we'll get to in a couple of weeks. It's also the only book in the Old Testament named for a non-Jewish person. Ruth was not a Jew, as we'll see. She was a Moabite. If we were to outline the book of Ruth, it would look something like this. Chapter 1, verses 1 through 5 serve as a sort of prologue. And then from chapter 1, verse 6 through the end of chapter 1 is about Ruth and Naomi and their relationship. And then in chapter 2, it's about Ruth and Boaz and their meeting and the character of both of those people. And then chapter 3 is about Ruth and Boaz and the proposal of marriage. And then chapter 4, verses 1 through 12, is about the redemption of Ruth. And then verses 13 through 22 serve as an epilogue to the whole story. So let's start with Ruth 1, 1 through 5. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech. The name of his wife was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to the country of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. Now they took wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. So the woman survived her two sons and her husband. So Ruth's story takes place during the time of the judges. And we know from the book of Judges that this was a very chaotic time in the life of the people of Israel. It was a lawless time. We're told twice in the book of Judges that in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. So in the midst of this political, civil, and spiritual chaos, at some point there was a famine in the land. None of us, I would wager to guess, has ever gone hungry for more than a few hours. So we don't really know what it's like to experience a famine, wondering if there will be enough food to feed our children or if we will all die of starvation. It must have been pretty severe, and it presented this man, Elimelech, with a pretty desperate choice because he chooses to take his family and leave the promised land, the land that they had just come to, that God had led them to, promised them this land, and here he is leaving this land and traveling to Moab. Now, Moab was Israel's neighbor to the southeast on the other side of the Dead Sea. They were not on great terms with the Hebrews. If you'll remember from the book of Numbers, Moab is the country that hired Balaam to curse Israel as they were wandering through the wilderness and coming towards the promised land. And when that didn't work, Moab took Balaam's advice and got their women to seduce the Israelite men and entice them into Baal worship. And so they continued to be an enemy of Israel, fighting against Joshua during the conquest of the land. And in Judges 3, Israel served Moab for 18 years until Ehud delivered them. If you remember Ehud, the judge, the left-handed judge who buried his dagger in the king of Moab's belly and delivered Israel. So Elimelech takes his family there. So he must have been pretty desperate to go into enemy territory, a hostile environment, but there was food there and he had a family to feed. So he takes his family, he travels there, and then he dies. And so Naomi is left in hostile culture, in a hostile territory with her two sons. They marry these two Moabite women, which was forbidden according to the law of Moses. I don't know how Naomi felt about that. The text doesn't tell us if she was apathetic to the law or if she was heartbroken over her sons breaking the law by marrying these foreign women. But the sons, neither one of them have children, and then they both die. And so Naomi is left in a foreign land, a pagan land full of people hostile to Israel. She has lost her husband and both of her sons, and her two daughter-in-laws come from among this pagan people group. So this is a pretty desperate situation that Naomi finds herself in. And she has no one to provide for her. She's lost her husband and both of her sons. She's a widow. And she has no one to provide for her. So that kind of sets the scene for the rest of the book. Naomi is in a desperate situation. The rest of chapter 1 then gives us some insight into the person of Ruth and her relationship with Naomi. Let's look at beginning in verse 6 of chapter 1. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. Therefore she went out from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me, and the Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of her husband." So she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "Surely we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband tonight and should also bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." So we see Naomi in her grief showing kindness to her daughters-in-law, but we also see her speaking in a way that should be fairly familiar to us, because she sounds a lot like Job in this passage. The hand of the Lord has turned against her. He has afflicted her in this way. But even in the midst of that, she has good character enough to show kindness to her daughters-in-law, thinking of their well-being and their future, and she tries to convince them to stay in their own country with their own people and to find new husbands. She assumes that that would be easier for them than going to Israel, where they will be foreigners. And Naomi knows what that's like. She's been living as a foreigner in the land of Moab now for like 10 years. We also see some of her Hebrew way of thinking here. If they go to Israel with her, they can't just marry anyone. They would need to marry someone from Naomi's family. That's how the Old Covenant laws worked. Now, of course, in Israel, in the time of the judges, everyone did what was right in their own eyes. They weren't all keeping the law. But this shows us that Naomi was thinking about the law and about what was supposed to happen if they did return to her with her to Israel. So then if we keep reading in verse 14, "Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, 'Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law.' But Ruth said, 'Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you from me.'" So this is probably the most well-known passage in the book of Ruth, her declaration of loyalty to Naomi and Naomi's God. It's a pretty incredible profession of loyalty to another person, in this case, her mother-in-law. We don't know how old Naomi was at this time, but we do know she's too old to have more children. So she is in need of someone to care for her, and Ruth isn't really in the best position to do that. She's a widow herself, but she's determined to stick by Naomi and to care for her. It's also a profession of faith in the God of Israel. She acknowledges him to be her God, and she knows that he is able to know her actions and what she does and to hold her accountable for those actions. And so she vows that she will stay loyal to Naomi and to Naomi's God. And so the two women travel to Bethlehem in verse 18. When she saw that she was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her. Now the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem. And it happened, when they had come to Bethlehem, that all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" But she said to them, "Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has afflicted me?" So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. So again, Naomi is sounding a bit like Job in this passage. blaming God for her situation, and yet we see at the very end that they have returned to Bethlehem just in time for the barley harvest. So God is showing them some grace and some kindness, a great kindness, actually, that they're not aware of yet as they begin to think about how they will feed themselves as the barley harvest gets underway. And so as we move into chapter 2, this is where we really begin to see the true character of this woman, Ruth. She demonstrates for us diligence, hard work, industriousness, kindness, all the things that Proverbs taught us. And, of course, she meets Boaz. Let's read a little bit of this story. I think we can probably manage to read through the whole book of Ruth tonight. But let's read the first 16 verses of chapter 2. There was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered him, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" So the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, "It is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." And she said, "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." So she came and has continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "You will listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not go to glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close by my young women. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn." So she fell on her face, bowed down to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" And Boaz answered and said to her, "It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the day death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and have come to a people whom you did not know before. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." Then she said, "Let me find favor in your sight, my lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." Now Boaz said to her at mealtime, "Come here and eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed parched grain to her, and she ate and was satisfied and kept some back. And when she had rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. Also let grain from the bundles fall purposefully for her. Leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her." So we're introduced to Boaz. Boaz is a man of integrity. He's a man of great wealth, we're told in verse 1. He owns fields, he has employees and managers. He is a businessman and a successful one. He's also a man of very good moral character. He cares for the poor. He allows them to come behind his workers and pick up what has fallen, to harvest from the corners of the field. This was commanded, of course, in the law in Leviticus 19. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall not gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God. So Boaz is following the law of God in a time when most of the people in Israel were not. They were doing what was right in their own eyes, but Boaz is doing what is right in God's eye. He's also offering protection to Ruth. He tells the men working for him to see to her safety. He tells her to stay in his fields near his workers where she will be safe. And he's generous. He lets her drink water that his men have drawn from the well. He feeds her with his employees, feeds her so much that she's full and has some left over to take home to Naomi. He even tells his workers to purposefully drop some of the crops for her to gather, which makes her work more easy and more profitable, but that's got to cut into his profit margins. Remember, he's running a business here. So he's a very generous man as well. And lastly, he's a very godly man. I mean, he greets his workers in verse 4 by saying, "The Lord be with you." And judging by the rest of his character that we've seen in this chapter, I think he meant it sincerely. And even more telling is the fact that his workers return the greeting in kind and seem to have meant it. So he's a godly man running a business and has so much influence on those around him, even his employees, that they're happy and following God in a time when the majority of their culture is not. So that's pretty significant. Secondly, Boaz not only stands in stark contrast to the culture around him, but there's a thread of generational faithfulness here that's very interesting. If we look at Boaz's family tree, all we've been told here in Ruth so far is that he is related to Naomi's deceased husband, Elimelech. But we know from Matthew's gospel, when he relates the genealogy of Christ, that Boaz is mentioned. I'm giving away part of the story of Ruth ahead of time, but I think you all probably already know it anyway. So, Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. Boaz begot Obed by Ruth, and Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David, the king. So Boaz and Ruth get married and have a child, and their children have children, and David, the king of Israel, is their great-grandson. Which means that Solomon, their great-great-grandson, who wrote the majority of the Proverbs, was their great-great-grandson, and here they are acting out for us what it looks like to actually live what was written in Proverbs. I just wonder how much of what Solomon wrote was because of the example of his great-great-grandparents that had been handed down to him. Secondly, Boaz's family tree, if we trace it the other direction, notice that Matthew said that Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. Rahab was a pagan prostitute from Jericho. When the people of Israel entered the land of Israel, you remember the walled city of Jericho? There was a prostitute there named Rahab who aided them and ended up joining Israel. She became a proselyte, joined the Jewish people, and apparently got married and had a child. And what's really interesting is that during a time of cultural apostasy, when everyone does what is right in their own eyes, we have a generation that has seen God deliver them, bring them into the promised land, and they have wandered away from him immediately. And yet here, this pagan prostitute who converted raises a man who is King David's great-grandfather. And interestingly, the Bible is very honest about the heroes of our faith. Noah got drunk in his tent. Abraham lied. Moses got angry and disobeyed God. Gideon was afraid. David committed adultery. The Bible doesn't pull any punches. It tells us the truth about these people. And Boaz, the son of a pagan prostitute, is presented to us as a man who pictures for us the book of Proverbs and what it means to live a godly and wise life. And he is one of very few people in the entire Bible whose story we are told without anything negative being said about him. There's only a handful of people like that in the Bible. Daniel is one of them. Of course, Christ. But Boaz, there's nothing negative said about him anywhere in the Scriptures. He is presented to us as a very godly man. And his mother was a pagan prostitute who converted to Judaism. And so here we are in the story, another woman who was a pagan, Ruth, a Moabite, who also converted and is faithful to her mother-in-law and to the God of Israel. And Ruth is an example of the Proverbs 31 woman. Look at what we just read here in chapter 2 and notice that in verse 2, that Ruth showed the initiative to go. She asked her mother-in-law, please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain. So she's asking to go work, to go labor in the fields to help feed them. Gleaning means to go and gather or pick up what had dropped behind the harvesters. And so she's out in the field, no trees, no shade. She's in the sun all day long, picking up little bits of grain that have fallen to the ground, bent over all day. It's got to be backbreaking, hot labor. And she's volunteered to do it. She shows a great deal of industry. She takes the initiative to suggest this work. She follows through on it. She works all day in the field gleaning this grain, and then she threshes it out before she goes home at night so that it would be ready for them to use it when she gets home to Naomi. And finally, she showed great humility in verse 7. Boaz's manager said that when she came, she said, "Please, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." So it was supposed to be a law in Israel that the poor and the strangers would be allowed to do that, but she doesn't assume that she's entitled to this. She asks permission. And that had to be humbling, to admit that you were so poor that you needed to come and glean behind the harvesters, that you didn't have any other source of food. So she's humble in addition to all of these other characteristics. And she's humble, too. In verses 10 through 13, Boaz introduces himself, she fell on her face, bowed down to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" So she, again, is demonstrating humility. She's worked hard from morning until midday when this conversation takes place. She asked permission before beginning the work, and now Boaz has come and shown her this kindness, and she's astonished. She didn't expect to receive kindness. And this is how Ruth is different sometimes than how we tend to be. We tend to expect people to treat us with a certain amount of respect and kindness, and if we don't get it, we're offended. But Ruth is so humble that she's shocked when she does get that kind of kindness and respect from someone else. And I love that Boaz answers her question in verse 11 and says, "It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and have come to a people you did not know before." So Boaz is impressed with her because he's seen her character. He's seen how she cares for her mother-in-law, how industrious she is, and how hard she works. And so it's not her physical beauty that attracts him, although I'm sure there was some of that as well, but he's attracted to her character, to her moral character. And so the last part of verse 12, I think, is a key part of this. Boaz says, "The Lord repay your work and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." So Ruth has come to seek refuge in the God of Israel. She has come in humility. She has left her home and her family in Moab because she found more safety in God than she did in the comforts of home. She found more safety in trusting in the Lord than she did in trusting her own culture and her own family. And so that says a lot about her character. And Boaz saw that in her, and that's what attracted him and impressed him enough that he wanted to show her this kindness. Beginning then in verse 17, "So she gleaned in the field until evening and beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. Then she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. So she brought out and gave to her what she had kept back after she had been satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, 'Where have you gleaned today, and where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you.' So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, 'The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz.' Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, 'Blessed be he of the Lord, who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead.' And Naomi said to her, 'This man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives.' Ruth the Moabite said, 'He also said to me, "You shall stay close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest." And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, 'It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women and that people do not meet you in any other field.' So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law." So Naomi caught on pretty quickly that something was up with the day's work. Ruth came home with her arms overflowing with blessings, and Naomi says, "Right, somebody showed you grace today. Who was it?" And so Ruth tells her that his name was Boaz, and Naomi recognizes him, and she begins to recognize the grace of God in her life. Whereas previously she was saying, "God has afflicted me, God has turned his hand against me," now she begins to recognize that God is moving for good in her life. She knew that God existed and that he was sovereign, but she couldn't see past the pain of her affliction and her sorrow and her circumstances, but now she begins to see it. And Boaz had only begun to show kindness, but God had been showing it all along. I mean, back in chapter 1, verse 6, he had stopped the famine and provided food in the land of Israel so Naomi could return home. He had bound Ruth to Naomi in love in a way that kind of goes beyond our understanding and what would be expected. He preserved Boaz here to be a redeemer for them, and he brought them home to Israel right in time for the barley harvest and directed Ruth's steps to Boaz's field. So God's hand has been in this the whole time to work good for Naomi and Ruth. So now they have food. They have a measure of protection, but this is not a long-term selection. The harvest season is coming to an end, and how are they going to eat now that the harvest has passed? They need a more permanent solution. And so we see in chapter 3 that Naomi counsels Ruth to motivate Boaz to action as a kinsman redeemer. Chapter 3, verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? Now Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself, put on your best garment, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do." And she said to her, "All that you say to me, I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her. And after Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was cheerful, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Now it happened at midnight that the man was startled and turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, "Who are you?" So she answered, "I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative." So Naomi has counseled Ruth to take a bath, put on some perfume, her best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor where she knows Boaz is hard at work. And the threshing is an important and long and hard job, so Boaz will be sleeping there at work along with the rest of his crew. And so she waits till he's eaten dinner, had a glass of wine, laid down and gone to sleep. And she lays down at his feet and uncovers his feet, rolls his blanket or his cloak back, and lays down there. This is a common practice in the Mideast at the time, that a servant would sleep at their master's feet and use their master's blanket for warmth. So when Boaz wakes in the middle of the night and he notices her there, but he doesn't know who this is. This is not my servant. Who is this woman? And so he's startled, and she responds to him and says, "I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative." And so she is informing him, you have a duty here as a kinsman redeemer. She is proposing marriage. Now, Boaz then responds, beginning in verse 10. Then he said, "Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. Now, it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Stay this night, and in the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative for you, good, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you, as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, and she arose before one could recognize another. Then he said, "Do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." Also he said, "Bring the shawl that is on you and hold it." When she held it, he measured 6 ephahs of barley and laid it on her, and then she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "Is that you, my daughter?" Then she told her all that the man had done for her, and she said, "These 6 ephahs of barley he gave me, for he said to me, 'Do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" Then she said, "Sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out, for the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day." So Boaz is again impressed with Ruth that she didn't pursue a younger man who was rich or otherwise, and he promises that he will fulfill the duty of a kinsman redeemer, praise her for her good reputation, but then he drops the news that there is someone else in line before him, someone else who is a closer relative. But he does say that he will take action the very next day to resolve the situation. Now, this story has been one setback after another. First, there's a famine in the land, and so Elimelech takes his family and leaves home. Then Naomi's husband dies. Her sons marry pagan women. Then they're childless for 10 years, and then the sons die. And then there's this glimmer of hope when Ruth meets Boaz, this godly man who is kind and generous and wise, and he's a kinsman redeemer. But then we find out that there is someone closer than Boaz, and so there's another setback. And this other guy, Boaz is going to go to him and... I skipped down to my notes, sorry. Boaz is going to go to him and see if they can resolve the issue in this next day. And so we're on the edge of our seat now as we're reading the story. We want Ruth to end up with Boaz, but this other guy is now in the way. And so let's see what happens in chapter 4. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, "Come aside, friend, sit down here." So he came aside and sat down, and he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. Then he said to the close relative, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am next after you." And he said, "I will redeem it." So here is this guy agreeing to do the redeeming, and we don't want him to. We want Boaz to do it. So the really trying part of this setback is brought about because Boaz is such a man of integrity. He is the man of Proverbs, and so he's doing the right thing, even when it's not in his own best interest. And so as readers at this point, we're like, no, we want Boaz to be with Ruth, not this other guy. But the story isn't over yet. In verse 5, then Boaz says, "On the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth, the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance." So that's what we don't want to happen. We don't want this guy to end up with Ruth. This is like one of those TV movies or TV shows where the girl just keeps missing Mr. Right by just a few seconds, you know. Why can't they get together? Why do they keep missing each other this way? That always annoys me about those kind of movies. But then in verse 6, and the close relative said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it." So now we're going, yes, finally, the girl ends up with the right guy. Now, we don't know exactly why this other man doesn't want to marry Ruth. The text seems to indicate that maybe he already had children and didn't want to spend the family's wealth to buy a piece of land, and that would be his children's inheritance now becoming someone else's inheritance if he has children with Ruth. And so we don't know for sure. But that seems to be the likely cause of why he did not want to step up and do this duty. And so in verse 7, it says, "Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm anything. One man took off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was a confirmation in Israel." I'm glad we don't do that anymore. "Therefore, the close relative said to Boaz, 'Buy it for yourself.' So he took off his sandal. And Boaz said to the elders and all the people, 'You are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have acquired as my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from his position at the gate. You are witnesses this day.' And all the people who were at the gate and the elder said, 'We are witnesses. The Lord make the woman who is coming to your house like Rachel and Leah, the two who built the house of Israel, and may you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. May your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this young woman." So they conduct the transaction. They have witnesses. It's official. Boaz redeems the land. He takes Ruth as his wife. And now, as we're nearing the end of the story, things are resolving in a good way. We're moving towards a happily ever after. But we've still got a bit of unresolved tension. And that is, Ruth was married once before, and she was barren. No children for 10 years. Will she have a son to inherit the land? Well, the epilogue, beginning in verse 13, will answer this for us. "So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and when he went to her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son." So she does, and the author makes it clear that this was another grace from God. This wasn't just a natural thing. The Lord gave her an offspring. God's grace to Ruth and Naomi has been on display throughout this story, the barley harvest, the godly man, and now a son to carry on the name of Ruth's dead husband, Mahlon, and to care for Naomi as she ages. So this is good. Then in verse 14, "Then the women said to Naomi, 'Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel. May he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is better to you than 7 sons, has borne him.' Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her bosom and became a nurse to him. Also the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, 'There is a son born to Naomi,' and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David." If the story ended here with a grandmother holding her newborn grandson, it would be a nice story, even one that we could learn some things from. Naomi went from empty to full, from death to life. We could even learn how, when our story takes unexpected twists and turns and we suffer setbacks, that God can and does redeem our stories and bless us. We can learn that no matter how dark and bad things get, there's always hope. Naomi lost everything, but ended up with an heir who would carry on the family name, care for her in her old age. But this isn't the end of the story. He was the father of Jesse, became the father of David. Now this was the genealogy of Perez. Perez begot Hezron. Hezron begot Ram, and Ram begot Amminadab. Amminadab begot Nahshon. Nahshon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz, and Boaz begot Obed. Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David. So Ruth's son is grandfather to King David, from whose line comes the Christ. So there's something much bigger going on here. This story is connected to the story of Jesus. Ruth is a story of loss, but it's also a story of romance and redemption. Well, what is Jesus' story about? It's a story of loss, romance, and redemption. In Jesus' story, the loss is the loss of our fellowship with God because of our sin that happened in Genesis 3. And so Jesus restores that lost fellowship. In Jesus' story, the romance is found in his love for the church. And as Paul says in Ephesians 5, Christ is the bridegroom, and the church is his bride. And that marriage is about Christ and the church. Marriage is a metaphor meant to point us to Christ and his love for his people. Human marriage is not really about us. When a man and a woman say, "I do," it's really meant to point us to Christ and his love for the church. When we read the story of Ruth and Boaz, we see romance. Ruth is an outsider. She's out of fellowship with Israel. She has nothing. She's dependent on grace and mercy to sustain her. Along comes Boaz, a man who has no faults, who's captivated by her, who shows her great kindness and generosity, and then in righteousness pursues her redemption. And it costs him. It costs him financially. It changes the dynamics of his family and the inheritance. And that's why the other guy wasn't willing to do the redeeming. This is a true story. It's just like our marriages are true stories, but they're metaphors for Christ and the church. And Boaz's marriage to Ruth is the ultimate metaphor for Christ and the church. If Boaz, being a man, could love an outcast, a foreigner from another country, redeem her and bring her into his fellowship selflessly, how much more can God love all the outcasts of the world, redeem us, and bring us into fellowship with Himself? Our stories may not appear grand to us in the moment, but they are part of the great story of Jesus' redemption of His bride. And so our stories are part of the romance of redemption that's pictured for us here in the book of Ruth. It cost Boaz to redeem Ruth, and it cost God to redeem the church. Our redemption cost Christ His life. He paid with His blood. And notice that the redemption in Ruth is accomplished with a marriage, a union. We as the church have union with Christ, so much so that we are said to have been buried with Him and raised with Him and seated with Him in the heavenly places. He is the head. The church is the body. We are united to Him. The redemption in Ruth brought life where there had been only death. So too our redemption brings new life. Redemption in Ruth meant that there would be an heir and an inheritance. Where is the inheritance in the story of Jesus' redemption of the church? Well, the Bible tells us that we are heirs together with Christ and that we receive an inheritance in the kingdom of light. The story of Ruth, Boaz is the Redeemer. In our story, Jesus is the Redeemer. He redeems a people for Himself, His church to be united to Him, to inherit with Him in His Father's kingdom. That's the real story, the great story. Ruth's story, our stories, are metaphors meant to point us to Christ. But they are real metaphors. Ruth was a real woman in the lineage of Jesus, and we are real people with real lives and real stories, but it is all meant to point us to Jesus. So we can learn from Ruth's story that serving a widow, working hard with your hands, falling in love, having a baby, these things are not inconsequential. They are connected to eternity. They are connected to Christ. It's easy to see that in Ruth's story because it's in the past and the narrator tells us that it's connected to David and the Gospels tell us that it's connected to Jesus. It can be harder to see that in our own stories. Our stories may not appear so grand, but they are part of the story of Jesus redeeming His people. And so our stories are part of the grand story. And so rest assured that what we do in life, these little things like working hard and caring for our family, have echoes into eternity. We are part of the church, which is redeemed by and united to Christ. So what we do matters, just as what Ruth did mattered for eternity. And next week, we'll look at the Song of Solomon, and there we'll learn more about the love of Christ for His bride. Let's pray.